Hey, Tenderfoot listeners. I'm Liam Luxon, host of Status Untraced, a new podcast brought to you from the team behind Up and Vanished. It follows my investigation into the disappearance of Justin Alexander, a survivalist and world traveler whose life seemed like it was torn from the pages of an adventure novel. While some of Justin's friends and family believe he may have been murdered, it's not clear what actually happened. And a message he left behind just days before he vanished makes everything about his disappearance just strange. Check out this clip featuring one of Justin's friends and their recollection of their final conversation with him.
It was one thing that kind of made me feel weird about whenever he'd talk about his plans for India. And the more I've thought about it, especially over the years, it almost seemed like he was preparing for something because he wanted to be famous. He made that openly clear, like that was his end goal.
When you hear the message Justin left behind, when you hear about the remote and dangerous area where he went missing, when you learn about how the suspects and the police's efforts in this case all quietly started to fade away, you won't be able to stop wondering what happened. From Tenderfoot TV, Status Untraced is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts or subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus to binge the entire season ad-free. Learn more at tenderfootplus.com.
In a cold case, time is your worst enemy. The second you arrive at a crime scene, the clock is ticking. Most investigators say the first 48 hours is the most crucial time. Unfortunately, in Tara's case, by the time the police got there, she had been missing for almost 2 days. The last time she was seen was 11 p.m. Saturday night, leaving the barbecue. When the police arrived at her house on Monday morning, they didn't really know what to think. Was she abducted? Or did she leave on her own account? The first to arrive on the scene that morning was Osceola Police Chief Billy Hancock. I spoke to him in person not too long ago. He said the whole time he was there, he thought she would just pull up at any moment. Nobody was really alarmed yet. The first 48 hours of crucial investigation didn't really exist in this case. Now it's been almost 11 years. With each year that passes, it becomes more and more difficult to sift through all the facts. People's memory, exact times, and how things transpired, it all tends to get a little blurry. But today I want to explore an 11-year-old lead that seemed very promising at first, but has since dwindled away with time. I'm talking about the black truck. This is Case Evidence.
I was canvassing the neighborhood, talking to people, and I met this kid. He was like 20 years old at the time. He told me, he said, I saw a black truck parked in her yard. The truck was parked on the left side on the grass, the left side of her driveway. The truck was facing the little ditch beside the road on the left of her driveway. He saw an individual in the vehicle.
He found several witnesses of this black truck. One kid claimed to have actually seen the man driving the truck. Maurice reported this to the GBI, and they came to talk to him. But it didn't really go as planned.
They did send an agent. They went to interview him. Well, they treated him like a suspect. And so he clammed up. You know, you go talk to somebody, and they get the feeling that you treat them as a suspect through your questioning. They're going to clam up and they're not going to say anything, and the issue about the truck or anything like that was never discussed.
When the GBI came to interview this kid, he pretty much just clammed up and didn't say anything. He felt like he was a suspect and just got scared and stopped talking. And because of that, they were never able to get a sketch made of the driver. They had no information to go off of. So my immediate thought was to find this kid and re-interview him. If he could remember what he looks like, then maybe we could get a forensic sketch artist to make a composite for us. But first, I have to actually find this kid. Like I said in the last episode, this kid has been extremely hard to track down. But I'm not going to stop until I find him. But when I do, is he even going to remember this? And if he did remember seeing the man and could actually describe him, how accurate would it be?
My name is Kelly Lawson, and I am the forensic artist for the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. And what a forensic artist is basically the person that the police call whenever there's been a crime that was witnessed by an individual or even the victim. And I would meet with that person. They would give me a description of that person that they saw who perpetrated the event. And I would use basically photos to help them and myself come up with a likeness of what their individual, their perpetrator looked like. I have a group of photos, and it's usually about 200 photos, and it's divided up by sex and race. They're everything from celebrities to old sunshots. I want you to look through here. See if you see anything that reminds you of the guy that you saw. There might be someone who has similar eyes, nose, or face shape. Just anything that reminds you of him, pull it aside and we'll talk about it. And the average person looks through the stack of photos and pulls out approximately 5 or 6 photos. And they'll have one that maybe is his eyes and one is his nose. One photo will have the type of facial hair that he had. But usually they'll find at least one photo where the individual will say, you know, he just looks a lot like this guy. If you could just change this or that.
How do you think the passing of time affects the accuracy of a sketch?
That's a good question. Sometimes if an individual saw someone or was a victim of a crime that's very violent or extremely stressful, you will hear a victim say, I'll remember his face for as long as I live. His face is burned in my memory. But really, that's more rare. The average person who's the victim or a witness to a crime, their memory is the best anywhere from 48 hours after the event, because you have to give enough time for a person's shock to wear off, to about 2 weeks. Usually at about 2 weeks, things start to get a little foggy. But that's not to say that you couldn't describe someone that you saw a month and a half, 2 months ago. You could, and you could still get an accurate likeness. It's just not going to be as easy.
What about years?
Years, it can happen. Like I was saying, if it's something that really stuck out to someone, or if it was something that really kind of affected them, then they're going to remember that face forever. And people's memories are very unusual in that occasionally we tend to exaggerate things, and the more time goes on, the more we'll exaggerate them, or the more emotion was involved, the more we can exaggerate them. So if we were standing side by side in a convenience store, and a man came in to rob the convenience store who had a mole on his cheek, and we both noticed the mole, if he was violent enough and scared us enough, or enough time went by, we can remember in our minds that mole being a good 1 inch thick, when in reality, it was just a small mole.
If it's been a long time, do you take that whole exaggeration into account when you're making a sketch?
You try to. You know, obviously, if they're wanting you to make the chin extraordinarily long, and a human's chin is not typically that long, you understand that, and so you try to rein them in. So you will see some sketches that are strange or alien looking or not human, and a lot of that has to do with the personality of the victim. But I personally, as an artist, and I know the GBI specifically, we really seek to put out sketches that have nothing in them that would draw the attention away from the overall look of the individual.
In this case that I'm doing right now, a witness saw a man driving this black truck going on 11 years ago. They exchanged some words, and a lot of people speculate that this truck had something to do with this person's disappearance. So I was just kind of wanting to speculate the probability and likelihood of a sketch being done 11 years later being reliable or accurate in any sort of way.
Well, there's also another thing to take into consideration. If we walk up to someone or someone walks up to us and begins talking with us, and our mind is able to make an association like, oh, you know, he really looks a lot like Alan Jackson. Or, oh, you know, he really looks like my friend's cousin who came to that party that time. Then you can remember that face forever, too. But it's kind of whether or not that person is able to make an association. People are usually pretty good at being able to say, you know, I remember his face pretty good, or, you know, I just really don't think I'll be able to do that. And they're usually pretty dead on. I only have to turn away, on average, maybe 3 or 4 attempts at making a sketch a year. Yeah, so that's hard. So some random people talk to a guy, and then we're expected to do a sketch 11 years later. That's the challenge. And then you have the challenge of dealing with the fact that, okay, so maybe this doesn't seem like any of our persons of interest. What would we do with the sketch if we were to distribute it? How do we tell the public this is what he looked like 11 years ago? You know, sometimes if we're talking to someone and we get that gut feeling something's not right here, it can trigger our memories to be better.
So I guess the good news is it's still possible. It might be difficult, but possible. If we want a sketch of this guy, the whole thing hinges on this kid's memory. Kelly told me that whenever I do get a hold of this kid, she would gladly assist in getting a sketch done. But first, I gotta find him.
Why, hello there. Welcome to Radio Rental. If you're new around here and haven't heard, I'm your host, Terry Carnation. On Radio Rental, we play tapes of the scariest true stories you've ever heard. That's right, we've got real scary stories told by the people that actually experienced them. We've got stories of paranormal peril, near-death experiences, stitches in the space-time continuum, and more. Stories like these.
This person was looking for me. They start to take these long strides towards me. I was freaking out.
We started seeing it everywhere we went. It would be sitting there watching us.
I've never ran so fast in my life.
And it's all set right here at Radio Rental, the video rental shop of your worst nightmares. Radio Rental is available now. Listen 1 week early and ad-free on Tenderfoot Plus.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.